This podcast is presented by Agogi Combatives. Agogi Combatives is going to be a 17,000 square foot MMA facility located out in Rossville, Georgia, not too far of a drive from downtown Chattanooga, Tennessee, right over there by the Red Wolf Stadium. And at Agogi, you're going to learn from the best mixed martial artists in the region, like Torres Finney, Matt Harris, Elijah Carlton, and Jazzy the Jasmanian Devil Sergeant. And at Agogi, here's the big thing. You're going to learn real mixed martial arts. That's the big word, real mixed martial arts from the best coaches in the area. If you want to learn more, head over to agogicombatives.com. Once again, that's agogicombatives.com.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
You're suspect.
This is how I went.
All right, we are back here on the Watch It podcast. Another very exciting episode here ahead of us today, as a lot of things went down over the weekend that I feel like a lot of people are particularly interested in. We had UFC 278, which we're going to wrap up the show with today. And we also had the premiere of one of probably the most anticipated TV series of all time.
Rhaenyra's succession will be challenged. Knives will come out.
You are the king. Your duty is to take a new wife.
I have decided to name a new heir. I'm your heir.
Do you think the realm will ever accept me as their queen?
A woman would not inherit the Iron Throne.
Because that is the order of things.
When I'm queen, I will create a new order.
Oh yeah, that is HBO's House of the Dragon, the spinoff series for Game of Thrones, which wrapped up really not that long ago. In 2019, it feels like it was so much farther away, and I think it's a finale that a lot of people have honestly tried to kind of put in the back of their mind rather than thinking about it all the time, because it's not like Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul that we just had, or you could even say the new series of Dexter. I thought it was a pretty good ending. Some people say it's a bit polarizing, but I think the best TV series ending of all time was HBO's Six Feet Under. But yeah, we're back here in Westeros, back after that finale. Like I said, a lot of people like to forget. And, you know, all of that kind of faded away from the very early moments of House of the Dragon. They had kind of the opening notes from the Game of Thrones theme play very early on. They had a great kind of classic fantasy narration sequence with some pretty stunning visuals to follow with that. And, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I was immediately taken back in to how incredible this world that George R. R. Martin built, and excited to see a new-ish story from this world, because this was originally a book, Fire and Blood, that George R. R. Martin did, but it's more of like a history book is the way it's written, and that's super fascinating to me. Show obviously not going that direction. It's going to be more of a traditional narrative, and so many good things to like about this show. First of all, like I've been saying, you know, it's just great to be back into this world, be re-immersed with these characters. And, you know, I mentioned the world itself. It's a very different kind of world. As at the beginning of the show, they mentioned that this is 174 years before the events of Game of Thrones. So things are different. Things are the same in certain aspects where, you know, you have mentions of the Baratheons and the Starks. And I didn't really see any Lannister talk in this episode, but there's definitely the Baratheons and the Starks and the Tyrells and everything like that, Hightower, and of course the titular Targaryens of this show that we have, but it's different. They're not the powerhouses really that you saw in the early episodes and even to the later half of Game of Thrones. Very, 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 very different. But so the Targaryens are the ones in the big rule here. They're the big bads of the land. Well, they're not really bads. You know, they have a control over the land in a peacetime era, and a lot of good things immediately starting off this show. Starting off with Paddy Considine's. He is king of Viserys Targaryen. He is a guy who honestly, if you look at him, doesn't really have any business on the Iron Throne. He keeps stabbing himself with the parts of the throne, the little swords and everything, which according to some mention that happened in Game of Thrones is that if that happens, that means you're not fit to rule, which is very interesting that they threw that right back in there. We also have Matt Smith, who is the easy winner to me of this episode. He plays Prince Daemon Targaryen. He is the younger brother of Viserys, and he, to me, is going to be the guy to watch in this series, because I haven't read Fire and Blood or anything like that, so I have no idea where exactly the story is going to go, but, you know, Matt Smith is, at least to me, the biggest name that's attached to this show, so seeing him in here, that's great. He was most recently in Morbius, which not exactly the most well-received movie, but I feel like most people are going to know him from Doctor Who. But he is Prince Daemon in this. He is kind of the gray area that this show and this world is so well accustomed to at this point where you can't help but like him, but damn, this dude is kind of an ass. You know, you can't get fully behind him in a way because he's extremely violent. In this show, he's kind of been around, and now he's the leader of the Kingsguard. And the first time you see him, it's him assembling the Kingsguard to essentially have this night of terror in one of the darker parts of King's Landing. And it's extremely graphic. And that's something that I was curious about because the time in which Game of Thrones was made initially in 2011 is a very different landscape than it is in 2022. I just was curious if they were going to scale back some of the violence and things like that. And in certain aspects, they did. But in certain aspects, it's way higher. For example, this scene is terrifying to watch. It's very, very frightening the way it's shot. It's like they're just marching through the city. They're taking no prisoners here. They're literally wheeling away just these wheelbarrows full of limbs and everything. It's crazy. And then some other big standouts that we had was Rhys Ifans. He's Otto Hightower. He's the Hand of King Viserys. Really, really big fan of him as an actor. He's probably best known for his role in Notting Hill as well as the Lizard from Amazing Spider-Man and Spider-Man No Way Home, so it's good to have him back in here. But somebody who kind of snuck up on me, who I didn't really know a whole lot about going into this, was Millie Alcock, who plays Rhaenyra Targaryen, who is now, by the end of the episode, the one who's going into the full succession line of Westeros. And she was fantastic in this, and I haven't really seen her in a whole lot of other projects. In fact, I'm looking at her IMDb filmography here, and this is only her 14th project. I'm not really recognizing any of these others, so maybe people know her from other things, but this is really the first time I've been introduced to her here. And the casting they did on this show is fantastic, because you also have Emma Darcy, who plays the older version of Princess Rhaenyra, and Millie Alcock is the younger. But it's just really well done the way that they were able to kind of tie in the look that we associated with the Targaryens from the original Game of Thrones series, put them in there. I mean, they look hand in hand. I mean, Millie Alcock, to me, looks very similar to the way that Emilia Clarke did very early in Game of Thrones as Daenerys Targaryen. And then somebody else, two other people I really want to give a big shout-out to in terms of performance in these episodes is going to be Steve Toussaint, who plays Corlys Velaryon. He is a guy I really do nothing about other than that he had a brief appearance in Point Break, the most recent remake of that from 2015. I think he was like a cop or something back there. I knew I recognized him from somewhere. And he plays the husband of somebody who was going out for the throne when they initially were trying to figure out the way that the succession line would be passed down, played by Eve Best, who plays Rhaenys Velaryon. She's also fantastic in this, but there's just something about her husband, who I just mentioned, played by Steve Toussaint, who's very intimidating. He's a big guy. He's got the blonde dread, so he still has that kind of Targaryen look. And he, I don't know why, man, but I'm just really drawn to him as a character. But overall, Matt Smith as Daemon Targaryen is going to be the one that I feel like is going to win a lot of people over on this show. And another thing that I found very refreshing with this show is the use of really good CGI on TV? Because I feel like with the Marvel shows, that has been like the big time, prime time CGI kind of big spectacles that we've had on TV since the end of Game of Thrones in 2019. And, you know, I've talked about it before on this podcast that the Marvel VFX situation isn't really working out for me. I think it looks pretty terrible, to be honest. So it was really good to have these big-ass dragons back, these awesome fight scenes, the huge sweeping scale of all these cities. And I know that they are using the actual location. I believe King's Landing is shot in Spain. So I know they're using that, but they're also imposing the backgrounds and the wilderness and things like that. I'm really glad to have this back because, you know, like I said, the ending of Game of Thrones, polarizing. I would say most people not a big fan of it, but what you have to admit is, hey, maybe the story didn't go the way that you wanted it to, but the visual spectacle and the fact that we have something quite to this scope on TV is insane to me. It's insane. And then also reading this here, it had the highest premiere of any show in 2022, beating out The Boys season 3, as well as Stranger Things season 4 and Severance, which is huge. That's absolutely huge that it beat out Stranger Things, which to me, I thought that was the biggest season of TV of all time. But I guess I'm wrong here. House of the Dragon, it's coming in. It's coming hot. And yeah, we're in it now. It's so good to be back. I believe that this is going to be a full series as opposed to just a limited series, or at least I hope so, because I'm really, really invested inside of this. Episode 2 debuting on Sunday. That's when new episodes are going to be coming out on HBO Max. So very glad to see. It's also going to be on HBO proper. In traditional release format, but streaming HBO Max. So very glad to be back in the world of Westeros. We're going to be breaking down more of those episodes to come, but we are going to take a quick break. And when we get back, you know, I got to talk about Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman too, and all of the craziness that unfolded at UFC 278 in Salt Lake City. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Looking for the best sports coverage here in the city of Chattanooga? Well, then look no further to ESPN 95.3, as you're going to be finding the best local sports coverage all around. And hey, I know we have a lot of listeners outside of the greater city of Chattanooga here. And don't worry, because on ESPN 95.3, you're also going to find a good bit of national sports coverage as well. Coming up on our local slot, we have The Word with G from 12 to 2 every Wednesday. Every weekday, that's from noon to 2, Greg Larner is going to be breaking down the biggest topics in sports, so do not miss that. And then every weekday from 3 until 6, Wells Guthrie and David Pascal going to do the same thing. They're going to get some great guests in there. You do not want to miss out on those takes. And hey, new show coming in every Tuesday and Thursday from 2 until 3, KJ Simpson, big fan of the podcast here, big appearances on there. He loves talking all things sports. He's going to be breaking down the local high school football scene, also along with Greg Larner. Do not miss that out on ESPN 95.3, the ESPN 95.3 app, as well as on ESPNChattanooga.com, and podcasted segments and interviews can be found wherever you get your podcast. All right, we're back here on the Watch It podcast. Going to talk about UFC 278, one of the best cards in recent memory that I can think of. And I had said that on the podcast with KJ, where a lot of the times you get these sort of lesser known fighters on the card, or you think the cards kind of lack luster, that's usually when these come out big and they come out swinging. And, you know, that was really the case here. Not only did we have one of the best, or and I wouldn't say the best, maybe one of the weirdest fights of all time with Paulo Costa and Luke Rockhold, we also had one of the most shocking knockouts in UFC history between Kamaru Usman and Leon Edwards. So let's break down fight by fight main card here. Tyson Pedro came in. He got the work done against Harry Hunsucker, a dominating victory. I was going to be in round 1 minute and 5 seconds in. He gets stoppage. Absolutely incredible. Tyson Pedro is a guy who I'm a big fan of. I really am excited to see what he does in light heavyweight, because that is a division that really does need some fresh talent coming in there, mixing things up, a little more personality than we get usually with Tyson Pedro. So I'm very happy to see that in light heavyweight. For Harry Hunsucker, that's a tough loss. as he is now not doing great in the UFC in terms of a record. So we'll see what happens with him. Hopefully everything goes well for his career, and we will see. Then we had Wu Yanan as well as Lucy Padilova. That was a great fight that we had there. Padilova is going to get the victory from that fight. It was going to be a knockout 4 minutes and 4 seconds into round two. So very, very nice there. And then moving on, here's where things got a little sad for me. A little sad between Jose Aldo and Merab Dvalishvili, as Merab absolutely dominated that fight. Jose couldn't get a lot off in there. He was looking slower than he usually does, and it just was not a great fight overall for Jose, as Merab took the decision, a unanimous decision, after going all three rounds. And didn't know this initially at the time, but Jose Aldo went on his knees. He started talking to Merab about something. Mikes couldn't really pick it up. And turns out after, Jose was actually telling him that he was retiring. And he didn't do the formal whole, you know, putting the gloves down in the middle of the octagon, kind of went out quietly. He said, hey, this was my way to get back into the title shot here, and I came up short, and that's going to be the end for me. And then we had Paulo Costa going against Luke Rockhold. This one fight of the night, and I get where they're coming from in certain aspects, is it was one of the most bizarre UFC events I've seen in quite some time, because you have Luke Rockhold here, much older. He's a veteran in the UFC. And then Paulo Costa, who's kind of this polarizing fighter. He looks incredible. You look at this guy, you're like, oh my God. And then he just has a lot of conditioning issues. And that was very apparent here. He's a hard time finishing people. And, you know, with Luke Rockhold talking about the conditioning issues, is after that first round, Luke was done. He was putting his hands on the knees in the middle of rounds, and Paulo, he just could not get a finish. For some reason, he was not able to knock down Luke Rockhold, and Luke was getting absolutely bodied. And, you know, you would think it was the end for Luke. He'd put his hand on his knees. You'd see him start to do the heavy breathing. He'd just kind of aimlessly look off toward Paulo Costa. And then, boom, next thing you know, Luke, he just pops back up, and he throws a right into Costa's face, and Costa's stunned by it. He's wobbled. He actually got a knockdown in the final round, Luke Rockhold did. He went down, mounted Paulo Costa, and this is kind of weird. I've seen a lot of people talk about this on Twitter and Instagram and such. I'm curious where everybody stands on this, but he rocks him, and then instead of going for hammer fists or going for a submission, he opts to take his head and rub the blood all over Paulo Costa, which is fascinating, to say the least, because he probably could have gotten the finish there. Maybe he was very, very gassed. He just couldn't have thrown the hammer fist like he would have before back in his prime. But, yeah, it was just weird. And Paulo Costa came out. He took the fight. I don't know. I mean, that one, honestly, I understand that Costa got the victory because Luke Rockhold was literally giving up in a unanimous decision. Paulo Costa took that. But man, Costa, I don't even know if I would call this a full win for him, because I thought this was going to be the big fight that he had coming back. He's going to establish, hey, I actually am a middleweight contender. I'm not just some guy that you're going to throw out here. And he didn't really do that for me, if I'm being honest. I feel worse about Paulo Costa now than I did before this fight, because he nearly got taken down by old man Luke Rockhold, who retired after this fight. It just wasn't a good look for him. It wasn't a good look because it blends in to the criticism that people had been having with him well before this. He's got conditioning issues. He can't get the finish. So it's weird. I'm just curious what they're going to be doing here. I think Paulo Costa will either get the winner of Sean Strickland and Jared Cannonier, or the loser of Vittori and Whitaker coming up next Saturday. So we're going to be seeing what happens with that. But moving on to the main event fight. This one, oh boy, wasn't really ready for this, because KJ and I talked about this, that, hey, we both like Leon Edwards. We're big Leon Edwards guys, and but at the same time, we didn't really see him going faring too well against Kamaru Usman, who is one of the greatest fighters of all time. At the time, he was the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and round one was quite surprising. to say the least, as it was the first time that Kamaru Usman had been taken down in his whole career. Leon Edwards was able to get that done. So Leon Edwards clearly takes round one, and then moving over into the second, third, and fourth round, I mean, it's all Kamaru Usman. He's doing what he does. He's handling the fight extremely well, staying calm, staying collected, racking up the shots in there, doing an all-around fantastic job. And not to say that Leon was just totally losing those rounds, because Leon was able to get some good shots off. He had some takedown attempts, didn't quite work out in his way, but at least he was staying, the pressure was staying on Kamaru Usman. And that goes into the fifth and final round, the championship rounds, when Rogan, Anik, and DC are pretty much doing the eulogy for Leon Edwards. They're like, and you know, for Leon Edwards, this is tough, and you know, I don't know what happens next for him. And you know, I was watching this with James Haley and James's girlfriend Kelly, and we were also just kind of out on Leon. And James the whole time was like, I like how Leon is kind of staying on the pressure. He's looking for the shot. And he also appreciated how Kamaru wasn't just taking him down. He wasn't trying to, you know, pull the Izzy route and just dance around him and keep his distance, which there's nothing directly wrong with that. But Kamaru, he was staying on the aggression, which I like to see. And then literally Rogan or Anik starts saying, he's like, no, this is minute left here. Not sure what happens. And then boom. One of the craziest knockout upsets, whatever you want to call it, in the history of the UFC is when Leon Edwards shows a right hand, Kamaru ducks down just a little bit to the left, and then one of the most vicious leg kick knockouts I've ever seen. And just listen to Rogan after this.
Oh my goodness, look how he shows him the left to hide it.
Well, he's done this before.
Oh my goodness.
This is a great combination from Edwards.
Remember? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, losing his mind. And there's a great video, and I feel like it's kind of the same thing all the time when those guys do it, when they show Anik, DC, and Joe's in the middle, and he grabs him and holds him back, and he's freaking out. But I never get tired of seeing those videos. And this is one of the most warranted reactions, I feel like, of any knockout that they've seen recently. Man, it's just crazy that Leon Edwards takes down the baddest man on the planet, Kamaru Usman. Absolutely unbelievable fight that this was. Leon Edwards wins performance of the night. Like I said, fight of the night went to Paulo Costa and Luke Rockhold, which I agree with both of those, even though I kind of think the Luke Rockhold and Paulo Costa fight was a little bit sloppy. I've been calling it a bar fight this week because it's kind of what it resembled. It wasn't, you know, the technical proficiency that you necessarily expect from a UFC fight, but hey, it was extremely entertaining and always good for the sport to have more of those entertaining fights. And for Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, I think they got to run this back immediately. I know a lot of people going out there saying, hey, Khamzat Chimaev and Nate Diaz, which is just a weird fight that we're about ready to have. A lot of people think that, you know, if Kamaru won, it would be clear that Khamzat Chimaev's getting the title shot, because I think there's no chance that Nate Diaz takes down the Wolf. But now that kind of sucks if you're Khamzat Chimaev, because it's clear that Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, they want to run this thing back, or at least Kamaru does. I'm not sure what Leon wants to do. I wouldn't be too afraid to run it back now at this point. You fought him before, knocked him out. Hey, you know you can do it. But anybody can really do it in a certain aspect in that division right now. If you think about it, that's a stacked division. A lot of great talent coming in and out of there right now. Yeah, that's really interesting. This is going to be one to keep an eye on. I think they'd run it back, Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman 3. If not, Leon Edwards and I guess the winner of Chimaev and Diaz. Because Leon has said, hey, if Nate can knock out or get the win against Khamzat Chimaev, we'll run it back in a title fight. Which, of course, he's saying that. Leon Edwards was in big trouble, though, in that final round. Huge trouble. And Nate, he just pointed at him. He didn't finish him. Really, really bizarre fight that was. That was one of the weirder moments in the UFC last year. But hey, I don't know. I don't know what was going through Nate Diaz's mind there. But that is going to be all the time that we have for today. I know it's a little bit of a short episode. I have a lot going on this week. A lot of things going on here at ESPN 95.3. But do not worry, because I'm preparing for a massive the biggest one that we've ever done, Ultimate What to Watch Guide, coming up for Friday. This is going to be huge. Hell, there might even be two people giving you these recommendations, so it's going to last you a while. But don't miss that coming up this Friday on the Watch It Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast and all of our other shows on ESPN 95.3.